This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Up in Smoke. You can subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Cigarettes tend to be a lot cheaper on tribal lands.
Hi.
What kind of cigarettes do you guys have?
We've got the Sands. These are $3. And then we got these King Mountains here. They're menthols. They taste exactly like a Newport. The Senecas, those are $2.75, and they're not bad. They're actually made on this res.
Oh, that's a good cigarette.
American Indians and Alaska Natives have been targeted aggressively by cigarette marketing, and their rates of smoking are higher than any other racial or ethnic group in the U.S. But beyond that, there is a deep cultural connection to tobacco that can get in the way of quitting. A connection that's gotten twisted and exploited. Sojourner Ahebe reports.
As a child, Sean Brown says there was one thing he couldn't seem to avoid.
Everyone smoked or chewed or smoked and chewed.
Sean grew up on an American Indian reservation in Seminole County, Oklahoma, where he says tobacco was everywhere. In TV and radio ads, on billboards, storefronts, you name it.
Everyone in my dad's family smoked. I mean, chain smoked a pack a day. Grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, cousins, dad, all of them.
And at 9 years old, Sean had his first cigarette. He took it from one of his mom's packs.
Me and my friend, we chain smoked about 10 straight.
But for Sean and many American Indians, there's another side to tobacco. As a kid, Sean split his time between Seminole County and the family homestead in Sesakwa, Oklahoma, where his great-grandmother, a traditional medicine woman, would burn tobacco in the house.
Mom owned my great-grandmother. She used to heal people. And I was just a little tot, you know, three, fours, and fives. But I remember very vividly of people coming from all over just for her to put her hands on them. The smell of herbs in the kitchen. You can't beat it.
She was burning sacred tobacco. Not the commercial tobacco that's in cigarettes. This is a smaller plant. Sean calls it little tobacco. It grew in different varieties across North America before European contact. It's stronger and harder to inhale, which means that wasn't done as frequently. And it's a lot harder to come by these days.
Little tobacco is so much more. So much more powerful. So it looks kind of like basil.
Among the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, Sean says little tobacco is considered a sacred medicine. It's commonly used for prayer, spiritual protection, or gifted to someone to express thanks. Centuries of European encroachment on American Indian land have made it really hard to grow and access the plant in its original form. But Sean says the story of tobacco is part of a larger story of who he comes from.
I am Honichi Tokia. I am of the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, Alligator Clan, Tuskegee Ahojo Band, which is descended from the Okane Band, the very first people to break away from the Creek Muscogees and leave and go to Spanish Florida and become the Seminoles.
At the beginning of the 1830s, more than 100,000 American Indians lived on millions of acres of land in Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, North Carolina, and Florida. Land their ancestors had occupied and cultivated for generations. But white settlers wanted the land to grow cotton and tobacco, so the U.S. government forced American Indians to leave and relocate to designated territories, the infamous Trail of Tears.
And you had to walk 2,000 miles through it, barefoot, little food, little blankets, little anything. And then in the meantime, you were put in corral pens, like stockade.
At the same time, European settlers started growing a different variety of the tobacco plant, which was easier to inhale and very addictive. And as land was taken and warfare erupted between American Indians and settlers, tobacco was often used when deals were struck, but Sean says not in the way you might have heard about in the movies, what Hollywood Westerns called the peace pipe.
It has nothing to do with peace whatsoever. It's just what those guys called it when we brought out the pipe as a sealing, a deal sealer. When you share the pipe, that solidifies the bond between the two people, and the words are solidified within the smoke. And so that smoke rises to our ancestors, which then solidifies it in the depths of time.
By the time the Seminole people were forcibly relocated to Oklahoma, they were thousands of miles away from their local plants and medicines. Sean says they had to relearn where to find and cultivate these sacred plants. And by the end of the century, commercial tobacco production really took off, which came close to eradicating native varieties altogether. And that's meant many tribes have had to replace sacred tobacco with the commercial variety, blurring the lines between what's spiritual and what's not. That line was especially blurry for Sean as a young kid.
You're an Indian, so you need to smoke tobacco. You know, like, nobody really said that, but that's kind of the impression that because it is sacred, we have to now use commercial tobacco to still maintain sacredness. Wow, talk about like putting a chokehold on an entire culture.
Dana Carroll is a professor of environmental sciences at the University of Minnesota. She studies commercial tobacco use and its health outcomes.
Portraying Native Americans on cigarette packs, and there's a well-known one, American Spirit. So they portray I believe it's an Indian chief using traditional tobacco, and you can imagine it blurs the line, especially for youth, with, oh, is that commercial tobacco? Is that really bad, or is that okay?
High smoking rates have had a devastating impact on American Indians, especially those in the Northern Plains region. They are almost twice as likely to die from lung cancer than white Americans.
But we also see that disparity across many different diseases. So we see that with cardiovascular disease, we see it with lung cancer, we see it with throat cancer.
That's Madison Anderson. She's a doctoral student in epidemiology at the University of Minnesota. She's Anishinaabe, and she studies cardiovascular disease and tobacco use in American Indian communities. She says a lot of smoking cessation programs don't take into account the sacred role of tobacco in American Indian culture and don't differentiate between that little tobacco and the commercial kind. So the message to quit falls flat.
A lot of the anti-tobacco messaging can be taken in a negative way. If you're not distinguishing the difference between commercial and traditional tobaccos, telling someone to live a tobacco-free life doesn't necessarily give off the same message.
Sean Brown experienced that disconnect in 2015 when he first tried to quit smoking. At that point, he had moved to Montana and saw an ad on TV for the state's quit line.
And so I gave him a call. Nice people. But I had a problem initially with just giving up tobacco. I couldn't in my soul just give it up.
At that point, Sean had been using commercial tobacco consistently for at least 10 years.
I smoked about a pack a day by the time I was early 20s. And I had a hard time just taking a walk.
Then in 2020, his teeth started to feel weird. So he went to get them checked out by a dentist.
And apparently I was somewhere in a mid-stage, not advanced or anything, but I was somewhere in a mid-stage of this progressive gum disease.
For Sean, this was kind of like a breaking point. He knew he had to quit, but he didn't know how he was going to do it. Luckily, the Montana quit line he tried to use 5 years earlier now offered a culturally specific program just for American Indians. Thomas Ilioya is the clinical director for health initiatives at National Jewish Health, which operates telephone helplines in 20 states across the country for people trying to quit tobacco. He says their usual approach of telephone coaching sessions didn't seem to work for their American Indian clients.
When they would call in, we're less likely to go from completing an intake on to completing a coaching call. If they did complete a coaching call, they were less likely to go on to complete a second or a third coaching call, which is where we start to see quit rates really start to increase after about that third coaching call.
A lot is riding on that first call, which is why Thomas says his team had to completely revamp the intake process altogether.
Having a lot of questions without discussion can come across as insensitive. So the intake has been adapted to have a more conversational flow, asking permission to continue asking questions instead of just sort of hitting them with a barrage of questions right from the beginning.
And after some talks with Indigenous leaders in Montana, Thomas says it was clear American Indians wanted to work with people from their own community who could understand the cultural significance of sacred tobacco in their lives. So the Quitline exclusively hired American Indian coaches to work with participants. And it worked. People actually stayed in the program longer. The first time Sean called Montana's culturally specific Quitline, he got on the phone with a coach named Kim.
How are you feeling? You know, do you have enough of the lozenges or the gum or the patches or whatever?
And he vividly remembers a sense of relief washing over him when he heard Kim's voice.
There's a certain dialect that comes from natives that you just pick it up, and it just, something about it, it makes me feel more at home.
By Sean's 50th day in the program, he was past most of the serious urges, withdrawal symptoms, and he wasn't depending as much on the nicotine supplements. Ultimately, he says, Kim saved his life. He hasn't used commercial tobacco since the program ended. The pain in his teeth has subsided, his blood pressure is normal again, and he's not as anxious and high-strung.
It felt like, yeah, just a breath of fresh air.
Across many American Indian cultures, there's this concept that every individual is a culmination of the previous seven generations. Sean says he feels a strong connection to his ancestor, John Brown, the last governor of Seminole Nation before Oklahoma statehood. He founded Sean's hometown of Sesakwa, Oklahoma, in the late 1800s and negotiated a series of agreements and treaties between tribes and the federal government.
I have his Bible. It is a New Testament copy entirely of Muskogee. It was printed in 1905. It has his writing in it. All of us have put our hands upon it because he led us through Oklahoma times. And now it's Montana times. And Montana Seminoles are, by God, we're not going to be held down by commercial tobacco.
That story was reported by Sojourner Ahebe. She is our Health Equity Fellow.